Welcome to SEC Unfiltered, home of the best SEC content on the internet. The following is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks is the simplest fantasy game on the market, focused around prop total entries. You pick 2 to 6 players, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks has no sharks, optimizers, or mass multi-entry guys. It's literally just you against the projection. They also allow mixed sport entry. So, for example, you can take the over on LeBron, parlay with the under on Mahomes. They've got college sports, pro sports, literally anything and everything you can think of. They have got it over at Prize Picks. They also have a slick, easy-to-use mobile app, both on the App Store and Google Play. They're rated 4.8 stars in the App Store with rave reviews as well. Guys, so many fans and listeners of SEC Unfiltered have made tons of money with our friends at Prize Picks, and you should as well. So again, go download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com, and when you do, use the promo code SECU to receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Be sure to check them out and tell them that Chris from SEC Unfiltered sent you. Let's get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Joining us on the show today, the SEC Unfiltered platform, former Mississippi State coach and former University of Florida coach, Dan Mullen. Coach, I appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, great to be with you.
Awesome. So, Coach, tell us, you're doing some of the TV stuff now, still got your foot in the football. What's a day in the life of Dan Mullen right now?
It changes quite a bit. During the season, it's actually a pretty busy schedule with the TV-wise. You get in. The week starts. I get home on Sunday. You've been up all night, but you kind of recover. Monday, we get into – I call the Thursday night game of the week with Matt Berry on ESPN. Mm-hmm. And so on that Monday, you're kind of really getting into breaking down the teams that are playing in the game. I'm watching the film, studying the film, making notes, going through all the different game notes, prepping that way. We have production meetings on Monday, and Tuesday's kind of the similar deal, getting ready for the weekend. A lot of times on Tuesday you're doing different interviews, some other shows, whether it's radio, podcasts, other things. Wednesday is a travel day. You leave early Wednesday morning. Fortunately, I live in outside of Atlanta right now. It's a pretty easy airport to get you just about anywhere you want to go. But you fly in to wherever the place is. Usually we'll go and we'll go do some coaches meetings Wednesday with the home team. We'll do, Matt and I will film some different production. Last year we did that, tried to do the Maddie and Mullen Cup, the little golf series we did to show the local, you know, all the town, the university course. And it was really interesting. Former people that went to the school and interviewing different people to get stuff for the show. And you usually do the visiting team meetings Wednesday night, Thursday. Mm-hmm. You have production meetings, you call a game. Friday, I head up to Bristol. We're in studio Friday night. And then Saturday's the, you know, there's a lot of, I guess a lot of people would say, boy, it's hard to say it's a hard day. We get in the studio at about 11:30 in the morning. We go into our room, myself, Joey Galloway, and Matt Berry, and you sit in this room, and we have a thing of televisions. So we have, I think it's 12 total, 10 or is it? Yeah, it's 10 total TVs we have lined up with all the different games from around the country that we have on all day. And then, you know, we're leaving, we're watching the games, making notes, doing things. And then every halftime and end of game, you get up and you get on set and you talk about what's going on. And then we start filming when the Pac-12 late night games would end. We'd start filming that the college football final show in the middle of the night and sleep for about an hour, catch an early flight home and rinse and repeat. So the season part of it's very similar. The time where my life's very different is right now in the off season. You know, where you get a lot of time. I get a lot of time. I'm at home, you know, working on different projects, some different business things that I have going on. And you know, the best part, I get to spend a lot of time with my families. I don't miss kids' games. Get to spend a lot of time with my wife. We have a great time. So, actually, I had to have knee surgery this off season, so it slowed down my golf game a little bit. But I'm recovering now.
Yeah, you speaking of golf, I mean, you talked a little bit off air, talking about maybe a little bit of a younger Charlie Woods here. But Charlie Woods potentially got a son there. I know he's playing basketball, you said, but it sounds like you got a hell of a golfer on your hands.
Well, yeah, my son can. He's a big golfer. then he hit his growth spurt this year. So you know, my wife's side of the family all really tall. So he kind of hit that growth spurt in eighth grade right now as an eighth grader. He's 6'3", eighth grader. So now I'm learning a new world from football. I'm learning the AAU basketball circuit world right now. He's playing on the Atlanta Celtics. And so I'm learning about going to tournaments every week and doing AAU basketball, which is all new to me.
Well, Coach, I'm sure you're enjoying the off time, obviously getting to go see your kids play, spending more time with family. But is there an itch to get back? I mean, your name's always going to be mentioned with jobs coming out there every year until you actually do it, if you do it. Is there an itch? What do you miss the most, just the day-to-day of working in college football, maining these big SEC programs like Mississippi State and Florida?
You know, I won't say I never get the itch, but, you know, in today's world, it's a very different – you know, the coaching has evolved. And I think Chip Kelly had a great thing that came out recently. I saw, you know, talking about that being the head coach, you're such a CEO. And he was at a point where, you know what, he got the opportunity. He wanted to coach. And that's, you know, if one of those things you miss a lot of the, you know, the camaraderie with the players and the coaching staff, you know, that kind of that team family feeling that you would always have, you know, that ability. You go and you see young guys develop, grow, and become the best that they can be. Those are things that you miss, you know what I mean? And then, you know, when I get to call a game on Thursday night, you go down on the field pregame, that hype around the stadium, the juice, the energy, you miss some of those things. But in today's world, there's so much more that comes with it. You know, when I talk to all of these coaches, and especially – you know, the head coach is out there saying, hey, you know, I mean, I saw it at even more and more at the back end where you're spending less and less time coaching, you know, and more time as kind of the CEO running the whole organization.
And Coach, you mentioned it. It's changed obviously a little bit since you've been out. I saw you were on Outkick with Trey Wallace, I believe. You're talking about the NCAA. You were on, tell me, correct me the years, maybe I got it off here, but 17, 18, you were on the oversight committee, correct?
Yeah, it was around then. I don't know, it was 16, 17, 17. I forget the exact years, but in that time frame.
Yeah, in that time frame. You said the coaches kind of were telling the NCAA, like, yeah, in theory, this all makes sense, guys, but this isn't how it's going to play out. This isn't it. Why do you think they didn't listen up front when y'all were telling them that back, what, 5, 6 years ago?
Well, I think a lot of times with coaches, and you see it all the time everywhere, is the coaches are so competitive and are always, you know, people are always trying to look for an edge, right? And, you know, you sit in the SEC meetings sometimes, all the head coaches. If I make a suggestion, you know, there's coaches there like, is that better for him or worse for us? Or why is he suggesting?
What's his agenda?
What's the competitive edge he's trying to get? And, you know, and it's not always that case. So I think a lot of times the NCAA, and they're looking and saying, okay, boy, we want to make sure that the coaches don't have all the control. The administrators have the control. The players have the control. And so I think a lot of times when the coaches would make points, they're looking and saying, okay, well, your argument is for you to keep control. And we want to have control. We want to make sure the players have control. And I think the sad part about all of that is, as a coach, you always have the players' interest at the heart. You know, I mean, I'd always sit there sometimes and say, you know, the NCAA didn't sit in someone's living room and talk to the young man and their parents and say, this is how we're going to help you develop into the future. You know, here's our plan for success for you, for your development. You know, they didn't build those individual personal relationships with everybody. And they're not the ones that on a daily basis are responsible for an entire organization and really the face of the university. And so, you know, but I think they kind of maybe missed the boat of not realizing what everything would become. You know, that the issues of transfer portal. I think if you would talk to a coach back in 2017 and said, hey, transfer portal, it's open for everybody. You just can sign up and go. Every coach to a T would say that's going to lead to just basically free agency. It's not going to lead to the get rid of the paperwork that the NCAA has to do or investigation. Is this kid have the right because, you know, his family member's ill or this issue or that issue? So just eliminates our paperwork and the kids can make their decisions. And I think if you got into the NIL, the coaches say number one thing NIL is going to do is be about recruiting. And the NCAA's argument would be, no, it'll have nothing to do with recruiting. It's about athletes being able to gain their worth. And you have the coach just saying, we agree with you. That's fantastic. They should get their worth. However, it's going to get spun into recruiting. And, you know, I think those are things that maybe the foresight, or maybe they did and they just didn't care. You know, it's just like, hey, we don't care. Or there's nothing we can do about it. So I think the problem was once it started to spin out of control, you can't put it back. I think one of the great scenarios would be, and you hear people say it all the time, remove college football from, you know, let's remove major college football.
It's its own entity.
Into its little bit of an own entity. You know, and let's look at, can we manage all the other sports through the amateurism that they are? And then what's the best way to put college football? I'll almost come in and just blow it up. Right. And say, hey, okay, here's the teams that are getting blown up and moved out. And we're going to create a whole new set of rules, calendar, especially everything around that to try to put it back into the box and make it where it's just not somewhat out of control.
Well, Coach, that kind of leads me to my next question. You threw the alley-oop there. In a year, what do you see the NCAA – what do you see college football looking like? Is it that? Do you think we start splitting off college football as its own entity? Maybe you throw college basketball in that. What are we looking like? I know you got ears to the ground. You talk to people. You have good sources. What does Dan Mullen think college football looks like 365 days from now? Let's just say heading into the 25 season.
But I think it's going to be – it's very similar. I don't think anybody has the solution just yet. And, you know, we know there's a problem, you know, but they you know, you need solutions. And I hear everyone keep talking about problems. And I don't hear the solutions coming up. And I think that's the hard part. Here's the greatest thing college football has is, as crazy as some of this stuff has become, on Saturdays in the fall – there's no better sport in the world than college football on a Saturday in the fall. There just isn't. I mean, it is the pinnacle of sports. Every game matters so much, you know, every single week. I mean, and that's what makes it so special. And the passion that all the fans have, you know, and the product on the field is still fantastic. But I think this, I think there's got to be people in the end, you have to get some people together. And I think the people they have to get together, okay, are the maybe coaches. And, you know, some of the best people probably get together are, I don't want to like say me, but coaches yeah. that are fresh out of the game, that have a vested interest in the game, but still have a good understanding of everything that's going on a daily basis, but don't have an agenda. You know, I mean, they don't have a team. They're not like sitting there.
You don't have a logo on your chest. You're repping. Yeah.
I'm not repping the logo. I'm repping the sport of college football.
Correct.
You know, I think you have to get those people together with lawmakers.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know, people that all of the issues have come down because when all of these rulings and decisions go to court, the NCAA seems to lose all of them, right? Yeah. And saying, hey, that you're not operating within the laws. So you have to get some people that, and, you know, and administrative people that aren't logo bound, you know, whether it's conference or school logo bound. And you have to get people that are into the best of college football, what's best for the sport. And you have to get people that say, okay, this would be a legal path for us moving forward. Here's the options. Here's things we'd like to do. Here's how we make it fit within United States federal law, you know, and to create a big picture answer to where college football is at.
No, I think you hammered on all those points. No, you're right. Somebody who'd be fresh right out of the game, understand, sit in some big chairs before, is ran from top to bottom, organizations, Mississippi State, Florida. You're right. You'd be a great candidate as well. Because transitioning gears here, we're towards the football side of things. I always thought you were an interesting case study from people always use the term fit a lot in college football.
Yeah.
For all thick as you may. You're a New Hampshire guy, correct? You went down to Starkville, Mississippi. You were the OC at Florida with Urban Meyer. You took that head coaching job at Mississippi State in what? Because your first year was 2009, correct?
Yep.
2009. People start talking about Brian Kelly. Is he a good fit in Baton Rouge in Louisiana? Kalen DeBoer, is he a good fit in Tuscaloosa? They're both not traditionally Southeast guys. You turned a Mississippi State program around, and in my opinion, not because you're on the show. I'm from Mississippi originally, so I got a bunch of Mississippi State friends. I think a lot of my friends agree. You're the best coach in Mississippi State history. What do you think were some of the keys that gave you success on going into a place like Starkville, Mississippi, from a guy that didn't really know what Starkville, Mississippi kind of was like? I mean, I think y'all maybe went there a couple of times when you played when you were in Florida, but just kind of getting those roots in, what are some first steps and how big of a deal is that in college? Do people make a bigger deal about that from these coaches from that standpoint?
No, I think it is. I think it's important. And I think I'm going to be honest with you. The first time I ever stepped foot in Starkville, Mississippi was getting off the plane, being announced as the head coach. We'd never played there. And so, you know, but I do think as a coach, when you come into a program like that, I think you have an outline. I always believe this, and I learned this. I was very fortunate as an assistant coach with Urban Meyer for quite a few years. We coached at several different schools in several different parts of the country. Certainly being at Florida and being in the SEC for a couple of years, at least it gave me some background and familiarity and comfort of being within the league, because I think the SEC – you know, and they say it just means more, it does. And you have that understanding of what the league is and how and what it's like. And you know, you're talking about the Kalen DeBoers and you're talking about Brian Kelly's that hadn't been in the league before. It's not just taking over the program. It's the shock of what the league means as well, which so I had a little understanding of that. I think one of the important things when I came in to Mississippi State is I had to look and put a staff together, but I had to depend on some other people. Mm-hmm. And I had to get around and say, okay, actually Greg Byrne, and I'm sure, you know, Greg Byrne, who's the athletic director now at Alabama, was such a great help. You know, I looked at Greg and one of the things we sat and I said, listen, I'm from the Northeast. I said, what I need to you to do is you were around the program last year. Give me a couple of the guys that you feel are good fits, are comfortable with it here being in the state of Mississippi. And, you know, might be able to really help me with some transition. And they're Southern guys. They're guys I don't know. I've never really met them. And I'll jump in. And he did. And, you know, David Turner, Melvin Smith. I retained Jody Wright, who's just got was named head coach at Murray State recently. I was a young off the field like grad assistant. I made him like director of operations. I'm like, get in here. I need your help. But they were all Southern guys. And so I brought in some of my own guys in some positions I wanted comfort. And I said, give me some more names. And one of the big ones was Tony Hughes. He's coached all over the state of Mississippi. And so even though I didn't know those guys, I kind of went around and I said, listen, I said, I'm going to give you the outline, but we're going to take our outline and make it fit Mississippi State. When you have the outline, you don't have every specific. The outline works in how we were going to build the program, but we needed to fit the specifics around Mississippi State, the school and the state and the people. And going around and hiring good people that had a lot of those ties. You know, I went out right away. I mean, the number one thing you do is you find one of those guys, say, okay, get me around to the power brokers in high school football. Mm-hmm. I need to go meet with all of those high school coaches first recruiting. I mean, right away, let's get out recruiting. And you hit the trail recruiting. You get to meet all the coaches and listen and learn from them and say, okay, what's going on? How do we make the program better? And one of the ones, and the reason I took the job is I looked at some of the guys that were currently committed were some great players. Then I started researching. I'm saying, okay, well, if Walter Payton, Jerry Rice, Brett Favre, Slater, all of these guys are, you know, some of the best position players ever in the game of football at their position, at all of these different positions, are from Mississippi, and yet none of them didn't. I mean, our Hall of Fame should be unreal.
Yeah, it's unbelievable in states, yep.
But a lot of them didn't go, and for all the different reasons throughout history, I said, so the number one thing we have to do is make sure all of those guys now would have come to Mississippi State. Let's start within the state. Let's really recruit the state hard. All of those great players started to come. All the great players in the state started to come play for us. Recruited the heck out of them, got them all there. We put the outline in place, fitted around the people of Mississippi, and I was really fortunate. I bought into the school, and because of that, I think the people of Mississippi really bought into me. And when we got everybody on the same page, we were able to have a lot of success. And I think one of the things you see, recruiting's gotten a little bit even more national now than it used to be. So with coaches coming in with the fit, I think it's a little bit easier to transition on the recruiting side of things because, you know, Kalen DeBoer is walking into a school that has a national reputation to go get players from all over the country. But I always remember this with Alabama teams. Well, they had a lot of good local players now. I mean, they had all the top players. There's great football in Alabama, and they got a lot of those great players that always nicked it and then expanded out. And so I think the coaches come in, they have to remember that. And they have to find a way to fit the, you know, they're going to bring their outline to the program, but they have to learn the culture of the university, the state, and the passion of the fans.
No, absolutely. Coach, getting a little bit into, let's go on the board, a little personnel talk here. I always complimented you. I think you did a phenomenal job from this standpoint. Even, obviously, Dak Prescott, Nick Fitzgerald, you had Kyle Trask, Anthony Richardson, guys like that. You had your system. But I'll always give you credit. the quarterbacks you had within your system at Mississippi State and Florida all kind of had different strengths. And from working in the industry for different SEC schools, I didn't always see this with guys that I worked with. I feel like they almost tried to fit a square peg into a round hole with their system. You always did a phenomenal job, in my opinion, Coach, of adjusting the system a little bit to your quarterback strengths. Where does that start? Does that start, obviously, first time you get them in spring, you're kind of like, hey, what can this guy do as a staff? You go into these offensive meetings like, hey, guys, we got to set this guy up for success, tweaking it up. Tell me a little bit how that process works.
Yeah, well, you have to think your quarterback's touching the ball on every play. So how do we build around the strengths of the quarterback? And one of the things, as you said, you have your system. I think too many coaches, and I learned this early on, and one of the great learning lessons I ever had is we were at the University of Utah. We're running this spread offense. We've kind of tweaked it to this point. We felt pretty good about it, and nobody can stop us. I mean, we are undefeated. We're rolling up and down. We're playing. I remember, I think we played North Carolina the year where it went undefeated at Utah, yeah. Broke the PCS. And we had over 700 yards of offense against them. It was almost like we could do at will what we wanted. Now, we had great players. Alex Smith was our quarterback, built around his strengths. You know, we learned from that, which was we actually added Alex was not a great runner. We had Josh Harris when we were at Bowling Green, who was a dynamic runner. We start running this zone read, option football, all of this spread stuff. And we get to Utah, and Alex struggles, you know, is not the best athlete. And we're saying, okay, well, the problem is going to come for playing, we luckily had a great staff, Kyle Whittingham, the defensive coordinator there, who obviously is so successful in his career.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's going to look there and we're going to play. He's like, well, Alex is going to touch the ball every time we play. I mean, every play. I'm going to make sure he pulls it. I will not let him, you know, all this stuff you're doing, we'll let him run the ball and beat us. So we're like, all right. So we actually came up with the triple option and the shovel option. Other ways where there was a 33% more chance of him not carrying the ball. You know, believe it or not, people are like, boy, your quarterback's unathletic. How'd you get the triple option? And then one day, the RPO stuff came in. A guy went the wrong way. Alex pulled the ball and threw it to him. I'm like, whoa, hold on now. There's a whole new world we're getting into.
Yeah.
So you kind of learn from your players and their strengths. But when we left Utah and went to Florida, we thought, boy, if we had great players at Utah, we're going to get to Florida. And now we have all the answers.
Yeah.
And they're just going to be able to plug in and do everything we did. Well, you know, Chris Leak was the quarterback there at the time. And Chris had a very different skill set than Alex.
Yeah.
And it was something that we learned that, and especially at the quarterback position, we had to tweak some things because he had a very a different skill set. And so the offense, the exact same offense we were running with Alex, wasn't going to be as efficient with Chris. And we really struggled. So we really started to tweak the offense. So as a younger coach, you kind of learn. It's the humble pie. You learn through things. If we had, you know, we had coaches say, hey, we have a playbook that's 600 pages long. You use about maybe 2/3 of your playbook every year. And so it was really getting into the philosophy of let's get the playbook in place. Let's look at the quarterback strengths. Okay. And we're going to use the 2/3 of our playbook that fit this quarterback strength. Mm-hmm. And build around them and make sure we have the flexibility. I always think this is coaches. You know, a coach's job is to put his players into position to succeed, to see what they do well, not just run a system, right? And if you look at that and you learn it, the best coach in the NFL right now, mm-hmm. It's so simple. Is, you know, you go back 15, 20 years, it was the, by the Bible, West Coast Andy Reid, right? Yeah. Andy Reid is the most college spread offense of anybody in the NFL.
Yeah.
And every year, like, oh, well, we lost these guys. How's he going to fit this in? And how's he going to fit that in? Everything's built around the strengths of the quarterback. He built that up and then looks at the players he has. Let's build around the strengths of the players. Who cares about the system? We have our system, but let's fit what we do around these players. And I think that's how coaches become successful. I think I was always would try to pay great attention to the quarterbacks. I would always want traits in a quarterback of, you know, leadership, mental and physical toughness, intelligence. And I will build around your physical traits if you have the it personality traits. I'll build around your physical traits. That's my job to create the physical part around your leadership and your other things. And I'll create the physical around what you do well.
Coach, what was always your non-negotiable at quarterback when you were watching like high school film, evaluating them? It was kind of like, you're like, this guy has to have this.
Win. You know, I mean, I want guys that win, you know, I mean, I want guys, if you can't win in high school, how do we expect you to win when you get to college?
Yeah.
No, I would. That was something. And that winning, it didn't mean you have to win a state championship, right? It has to be that, boy, you know, you're at a school that's never made the playoffs and you took them to the third round. You won, you know, and at the history of that school, you won at a higher rate than anybody else that's been there as a player, as a quarterback.
Well, Coach, one more question. Again, I appreciate you joining us on for this interview. Coach, there's one guy, one coordinator, one system that you felt was kind of maybe a little pain in your tail at times. Who would you say in your career? It doesn't even have to be when you're at Mississippi State or at Florida. It could be when you were a coordinator. But who do you think gave you the most trouble from a defensive standpoint?
Boy, you know, I you have to go with Nick Saban, because I think he always he wasn't afraid to evolve to a point, you know, and he did such a good job. Now, granted, he had talent.
That helps.
That was never going to be an issue. But I will say, fundamentally sound. It was always so hard, even with the talent, to gain yards. You know, I mean, it was a battle on every play schematically. They had phenomenal talent, but were so sound. And, you know, and so the issue comes, you would go spend a game and say, okay, in the chess matches, I'm going to set it up where I'm going to have five chances to get you.
Yeah.
And if you miss two of those, you're probably not going to win the game.
Yeah.
You know, because their guys, talent-wise, can make up for mistakes sometimes too.
Correct.
And so, you know, I thought they did such a great job defending every single yard of the field. And, you know, because one of the hardest things was, boy, you wanted to score. Because they were hard to score on inside the five. So, like, you'd scheme something up and hit a play. You're like, please get in the end zone. Please get in the end zone. Like, they got tackled at the two, Coach. You're like, here we go. All right, let's go. We got to scheme this up and see, you know, even if I can create a great one-on-one, can I get the one-on-one where we can win?
Good stuff, Coach. Good stuff. Again, Dan Mullen joining us on the SEC Unfiltered platform. Coach, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy afternoon. I hope all is well. Wish you. We'll be cheering for you wherever you go. I'm sure you'll get wherever you want to go. I'm sure you'll get an opportunity. Keep killing it at ESPN, Coach. I appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thanks. Great to be with you. Have a great day.